When we come here to practice, then we come here to a protected place. It's a protected place from all the upsets, from all the dangers, from all the excitements of the world. It's a protected place also in terms of sila. Sila means morality. So when you come here, you're expected to keep the five precepts. The five precepts are, I'm training myself not to harm any living being. I train myself not to take what is not given. I train myself not to use harsh speech or lie. I train myself not to indulge in sexual misconduct. Sexual misconduct is taking another person for one's personal pleasure because of one's position, one's power, or one's money or whatever. Using another person for one's own sexual pleasure without regarding the other person. That is sexual misconduct. And the fifth is no alcohol and no drugs. Drugs in the sense it makes the mind unmindful. So these are the five precepts. The five precepts the Lord Buddha gave us for the protection of ourselves. He didn't give us to constrain us, in any way, but he gave it out of consideration, out of metta, for us to be able to stay in the realms of the human beings or even go up to the higher realms. He didn't want us to go down to the lower realms. And the lower realms starts with the animal realms, the ghost realms, the demon realms, and the hell realms. So if we do not keep the five precepts, we are sure to go there. It's our protection. So see it as your protection to stay within the five precepts. If we keep the five precepts, or at least try to keep them as much as possible, then we can call ourselves human beings. If we do not keep them, or if we go against one of them in a coarse manner, then we lose our right to be born as a human being for a while. Depends on how much we went against the prison. It can be up to 150 or 160,000 years, down in the deepest hell. And that we can do within 2 or 3 hours of our human life to get the ticket for the hell for 160,000 years. So better be careful what you do. It's a protection. So I put it in your heart and I hope you will try to respect it. It's not for my well-being. It's for your own well-being. If you believe it or not, it still exists. Don't think that the heavens and the hells do not exist. They do exist. We just are not able to see them. Or most of us are not able to see them. But they do exist. It is like 500 or 600 years ago, the people claimed, or in the West, they claimed that the sun is turning around the earth and the earth is flat. They've all believed. So when somebody came up and said the earth is round and the earth is turning around the the sun, then they wanted to kill this person because of their beliefs were wrong. Now, if you don't believe in heaven and hell, we are fate to go down. It doesn't matter if we have seen them or not, but just believing that they exist. This we have to. We also have to believe in the law of karma, that every our action that every our thought, that every our speech will have an effect. This effect can be either positive or it can be negative. Positive in the sense that it brings us good karma, negative in the sense that it brings us bad karma. This is something, if we are mindful, we can even see within this life. But most of the karma comes from our previous lives. So, we might not be able to see the cause of this kind of karma. But you can be sure that whatever happens to you right now is the effect of your karma that you caused either in this life or in previous life. 99% of it will be the case. So, every farmer knows whatever he sows that he will reap. When he sows wheat, he will reap wheat and he will not reap any other sort of vegetables or other things. So when we sow something like love, then we will reap love. When we sow something like metta, then we will reap metta. But when we sow greed, then we will reap greed. When we sow anger, then we will reap anger. It's very logical. We just have to look at the farmers, that whatever seed he puts into the earth, that will grow. And the more he cares about it, the better it will grow. So, whatever we do, we better reflect on what we are doing and what kind of effect it will have. This is incorporating the law of karma within our daily life. When I want to say something or when I want to do something, I will look at my heart and see the reason. What is the reason for saying something or doing something or thinking something? And then I will look at the effect it will have on my mind or it will have on my heart. When I talk about the mind and the heart, then this is the citta. Both aspects, the rational and the emotional aspect. In the West, we are used to separate it. So when I talk about mind, then it's more the rational part of the citta. When I talk about the heart, then it's more the emotional part of the citta. But sometimes I even mix it up. So when you substitute it for citta, that is everything, both the rational part and the emotional part. And you will understand it correctly. So we always have to investigate what we are doing, why we are doing, and what kind of results will it have, or has it on us. Is our heart calm? Then it's a good result. Is our heart excited, frightfully excited, or unpleasantly excited, then it will have a bad effect. So then we should not be doing this kind of deed, this kind of thought, or this kind of speech again. When we always look at our heart, then we will be able to tell what is good for us and what is bad for us. But if we don't have yet the ability to observe our own heart, then we better follow the five precepts. We check it out. Is it against one of the precepts? If it is, or if we are doubt, then we don't do it. That gives us the safety. It's the same thing for monks. They have 227 rules. If they are not sure if it's against one of the rules, they are not allowed to do it. So they better check. If they want to do it, they better check it out. If it's correct or not correct. But just in case they don't have anybody to check with, then they should not be doing it. And it's the same advice that I give to you regarding your five precepts. If you're not sure that it's against it, or if you're not completely sure that it's within the five precepts, So please do not do it. It's for your own protection. It has nothing to do with it. So now what we were talking about was heaven and hell and the karma. You do that, you evaluate karma in a worldly sense. When you are back in your worldly life, when you go to a shop and buy something and it does not fulfill your need, then you won't buy it again. Or would you? I doubt that you would. If you buy a soap that doesn't clean you, you would not buy it again. Most probably you would go in the store and replace it. So why don't you do that with your mind? Why do we take things for granted? Whatever comes into our mind, that is good. We never check it out. We never investigate if that what we produce with our mind in terms of thoughts, in terms of speech, and in terms of action is actually good. Actually has a good or pleasant or fruitful result for us. So this is the law of karma applied to the worldly life. Maybe you. So you all probably heard about the Four Noble Truths, so I don't have to talk about it very much. You all know the first noble truth, that there is dukkha, and that is mostly the reason why we come. We have dukkha. What is dukkha? Dukkha is a container for any kind of restlessness, of discontentedness, of suffering, of pain, of everything. That is called dukkha. Dukkha starts with restlessness, with interesting, being interested in other things, and so on, till to the most physical and emotional pain. This is the first noble truth. The second and the third you probably know, so I concentrate on the fourth noble truth. That is the path that leads out to the end of dukkha. And already I covered the first part of it, sila. That means precepts. So, the path consists of sila, samadhi, and karma. Sila is morality. Samadhi is the ability to concentrate on one object and also resting the mind in stillness or calmness and mindfulness. And panya is the way of developing wisdom. For the moment, we need just to develop some mindfulness and we need to develop to bring our mind to calm. It is a very, very easy and simple task. We just put our mind on one object. This object can be either the breath at the tip of the nose or the mental repetition of the word Buddha. Buddha, 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 Buddha. And that's it. And if we can do that, this kind of simple task, then within no time we enter stillness. The mind gets completely calm. When the mind gets completely calm, then it enters samadhi. Most probably, first of all, access samadhi. The stage of samadhi where we feel at peace and rest. It is like you are out in the storm or in the hail, and in the rain, you are completely wet, the rain hits you, the storm hits you, you are frightened, and you find a glass house, you open the door, you close the door, and you feel safe. The storm doesn't hit you anymore, the rain doesn't hit you anymore, and you are not frightened. You see everything just the same way, but you feel completely safe. Once you get out of this glass house, everything is just the same. So this is called access samadhi or upachara samadhi. Now once we've been in this glass house for a longer time, or once we've been in the upachara for a longer time, a lot of things can happen, but we still try to concentrate on our mind on the one object. Go on with this training until we reach the stage of deep samadhi. Before we come to the stage of deep samadhi, we see how the mind is going to center in. It really is a feeling that you will experience. The mind just focuses in. Like you focus with a lens, you focus the light, the rays of the sun. It's completely focused. Once it gets focused, your object will disappear. That means the breath will disappear. The breath becomes in the end so subtle that it will disappear. Or the Buddha, you cannot think it even anymore. You just don't have, you don't have any more the power to think it. Once that happens, and once you get over that last step, then you enter one-pointedness. One-pointedness is just one point. Completely focused. Before that, you were observing an object. So there was an observer and there was the object observed. That is duality. The whole universe is duality. There's an object and there's a subject. There's heaven and hell. Duality. There's nice and bad. But once we enter one-pointedness, this whole world will disappear. It just will vanish from our senses. And that's out of this reason we want to get there. We want to have the experience when everything just vanishes in front of our eyes. And all what remains is the knowing. It's a pure quality of the citta. It's called knowingness. Just knowing. Not sleeping, just knowing. And the body has disappeared and the whole world disappeared. It just, you can see it, it depends on the people or it depends on the characters of the people, how they enter this deep state of samadhi. But for some it can be like falling in a deep dark. In the beginning you still see the light above you, you still see the world, but it disappears. The deeper you fall, the more it disappears. In the end, there is just darkness, or in our case, there's just calmness, peacefulness, and knowing. And that's all what remains. Once we get out, the whole world reappears. Well, we are used to that, we go into sleep every night. You don't know what is happening during our sleep. So once we open our eyes, the whole world is again there. And that's the same thing with deep samadhi. But the difference there, it is something very, well, let's say, it's a sort of wonder. It's a sort of wonder that we can experience. But we have, of course, to put our mind to that practice. The practice is simple, just stick with this object. So why can't we do that? Why is it not possible? We can do the most complicated tasks in the world. We think we can do 3 or 4 or 10 things at the same time. But just a simple task like this, just putting our concentration onto one object and staying there, seems to be so utterly difficult for us because of our nature of the mind. It's a monkey mind. It likes to jump from here and there, to here and there. It's mostly in the past and then it's in the future. It is never in the present moment. So, Tanaja Mahabodha says about this deep state of samadhi, this is Nibbana of the little man. That means everyone who puts his effort and determination in the practice as described will be able to experience it. When? It's just a question of your determination and effort. When you sit now until for 24 hours or 36 hours, you might be able to reach it within that time. But most of the time, after 20 minutes, you run up. You want to do this or you want to do that. And after 2 seconds, the mind wants to think about this or the mind wants to think about that. Isn't it? It's just such a simple time. So we have to force the mind. And how to force the mind is not to force this point of concentration. It's forcing the mind, the moment we realize it's going off the object, to put it back. That's all what we need on effort. You understand that clearly? When we see that the mind goes out, that jumps away, then we pull it back and put it back on its object. Well, if you think Buddha, you don't have even the time to feel it. If you would be all the time, if you would be all the time with your Buddha, then you wouldn't feel it. Yes, but you are not. That's why, that's why it's bothering. But keep your questions, at the end of the session. So, because I'm just trying to explain how to get into samadhi. So, it's just when you notice and wherever the mind is going, it doesn't matter where it goes. If it goes in the past, if it goes in the future, you just pull it back. You're not interested what it was thinking about, you're not interested what it encountered, you just pull it back the moment you realize that it has gone off. The Lord Buddha describes it as taming a wild animal. You tie it to a rope, first you catch it, so we have to catch it. We catch our breath or we catch the Buddha and then tie it to the pole, to a point of concentration. And if our rope is thick and rigid so that the mind cannot escape anymore, then it will lie down. After it lies down and sees that it still cannot escape, then it falls asleep. And that's what we have to do. We just cannot let the mind jump out. It's not helpful for us, at least not in this kind of practice. And we want to do the practice that goes inside. We want to see we want to experience for the first time our true nature of the mind. Won't we? So, if we want it, then we must put a little bit of effort into it. Well, think about how much effort some people put in the past into climbing the highest mountain. Putting effort, staking their life. By finding new countries, new continents, they didn't care about the danger. They didn't care about numb legs or painful legs or freezing to death. They didn't care. They wanted to find their goal. So, if you want to find your goal, if you want to find your inner nature, well, just go ahead and do it. No matter what, I have never seen any person sitting in the airplane for 11 hours that has broken its leg or broken its back. But the moment we sit for 1 hour or 2 hours or maybe 3 hours, we think we break apart. It's just an idea. And the idea is coming from our chitta. The idea is coming from the kilesas or from avijja. Because it doesn't lie. It has the nature of jumping around to entertain itself. And the more it jumps, the more it feels entertained. So, the moment you sit down and be quiet and try to concentrate, then it will produce a lot of pain or unpleasant feelings to bring you up. And this you have to fight. First you fight it with not paying any interest to it. When the pain is becoming too big, then you fight it with investigation. What is the pain? Is the pain the body? Or is the body the pain? Or is the pain something different from the body? How is it? Is it changing? What kind of nature has it? Is it a point? Or is it an area? How is it? Is it changing? And you will see, in the end you will see, when investigating the pain, the mind can become extremely calm. But you don't forget that you don't want the pain to go away. If you just have this one thought, this pain should go away, then this pain will increase. We are just interested. Like any kind of researcher, we are just interested in the topic. And the topic in this case is the pain. In our other case, it's the breath. So we just want to know. That's why we stick to the tip of the nose. We want to know if the breath is coming in or if the breath is going out. That's all what we want to know. We don't follow the breath. We just stick it there, the point of concentration at the tip of the nose. Then we know that the breath is coming in. Then we know that the breath is going out. Then we know that the breath is shallow or deep. That the in-breath is longer and the out-breath is shorter, or the out-breath is longer or the in-breath is shorter. We know that it's going to switch from in-breath to out-breath. That's all. We're just interested in knowing. And when we investigate the pain, it's the same thing. We're just interested in knowing. How is the pain? What's the pain? Who is feeling the pain? Is the one who feels the pain the same as the pain? Is the observer the observed object? Ask yourself. So if it's not if the observer is not the observed object, then you are not in pain. Then you can say there is pain. Or when you observe a leaf or a tree, are you this tree? Certainly not. I don't think that you think of the tree that you observe as being yourself. So how can the pain that you observe, the pain, be yourself? It has appeared, like you're sitting on the street and you see somebody walking by. This person has appeared and it will disappear. So, whatever arises has to cease. And because we are not all the time 24 hours in pain, so it must have arisen and it must cease. And that is certainly something, in the long run, the longer we are going to practice, that is one of the main topics we have to fight. One of the main topics we have to investigate. Another topic will be doubt. Another topic will be laziness. Sloth and torpor. One topic will come at a time. They don't come all at the same time. Today it's pain, tomorrow it's doubt. Doubt that this kind of practice is bringing me anywhere. Or doubt that this kind of sitting is giving me any peace. Can be the same thing. Doubt or pain. Or laziness. Oh, I'm feeling so good, you know, why should I sit down and and strangle myself. So, this was a short introduction to Samadhi practice. Next time, I talk a little bit how to investigate. Maybe about the, I don't know yet. Maybe about Anicca and Anatta Dukkha or Avijja or something like that. Whatever comes up. So if you have any questions now, then you're free to ask. Yes?
Sorry. You are speaking about, you are doing, let's say, unwholesome action. Not skip action, we will go down to the four lower mm-hmm. reps. You are doing unwholesome action.
Mm-hmm.
We will go down to the four lower reps.
Mm-hmm.
I read Buddhist book.
Mm-hmm.
I may be wrong. I don't know. I read Buddhist book. According to Mara,
mm-hmm.
Mara, when Buddha was meditating, he can't disturb Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding is that Mara was at the time existing in the 11th heaven.
What?
Mara at the time was existing in the 11th heaven. In the 11th plane of existence. Was much higher than Buddha.
Mara is the lord of the lower realms.
Yeah,
of the hell realms.
Yeah. But it was, according to the book, it was at the time Mara was existing in the 11th realm.
I don't know. Don't ask me about these things.
Okay.
I know only about practice, I don't know about the book.
Okay. Sorry.
You have enough difficulties, you know, to coping with the things that come up within your practice, then try to understand what is said in the scriptures. If you have the experience, you know, if you have gone through all the things that you might, and then you might understand what is said in the scriptures. Or some even find, you know, some of the arahants like Lungpu Man or Thanachan Mahapo even find that there are some wrong sayings in the scriptures. That is not according to the truth. Because translations have been done wrong, or commentaries have been done wrong, or subscribing has been wrong. So there are some mistakes. Most of it this is clear, but there might be some mistakes. So, well, are you prepared to put some effort in your practice?
Right? Yes.
Huh? Yeah.
When doing Samadhi practice,
mm-hmm.
and you focus on your breath,
mm-hmm.
and you're feeling, I'll feel pain in my chest,
mm-hmm.
or my forehead.
Mm-hmm.
When do you know when you should just try to force your attention to stay on the breath,
mm-hmm.
or when you should investigate?
If you notice that there is some pain in the chest or in the head, then you should investigate about your breathing or about your concentration. So you might force it too much. Concentration, I mean, you know, the effort. It's the effort of pulling the mind back. It's not the effort of forcing the point down. You understand that? It's like riding a horse. If you ride it too harsh, you know, it will throw you off. But if you're too loose, it just goes in circles. So once in a while, you have to give it a push and show it the direction. When you see it's walking perfectly fine, then you don't need a lot of force. You just let it walk. The moment you see it's going off, then you push it back. And within this, you don't need a lot of force, forcing the mind on one point. All what is necessary is the determination and the effort just to pull the mind back and put it back. Normally, when pain is coming up, we only investigate the pain if the pain becomes a stronger object than the object, our object of our concentration. That means either the breath or the word Buddha. Only then. And that is the only thing that is allowed during Samadhi practice. Normally when we practice Samadhi, we do nothing else than practicing Samadhi. We have to be able to separate between investigation and samadhi. Samadhi is meditation for concentration and calm. Investigation, vipassana or investigation meditation is investigation for understanding, for teaching the heart. So there are two different things. So we should not mix them up. When we do samadhi, then we do samadhi. When we do investigation and we do not do samadhi. Within one session or within the time we determine to do our practice, that's what we do. And we don't switch with them this time. The only exception is the pain. If the pain becomes too strong so that we cannot sit anymore, if it becomes stronger than our point of interest, then we switch. Okay?
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
I think I'm practicing more on Satipatthana, which is the observation, the body contemplation thing. It actually happened by accident. Because I started on Vipassana training, and then I started getting phenomena. Mm-hmm. So while I was noticing the phenomena, according to another monk I spoke, I've actually gone through the whole of the body contemplation kind of thing, and now I'm stuck because it's like I built the sandcastle and it's completely gone, and I can't find my focus back again.
Well then, can you focus on Buddha? You can, if you want to. Yes. If you go a wrong way or if you lose something, you know, it's difficult to bring it back. If you drive your car into the wrong track, you know, the longer you drive it, the more difficult is it to pull it back. So you have to do it. Now, do the Buddha meditation or do the mindfulness of breathing in or breathing out. Whatever. If you think a lot, then it's better to do the Buddha. While you think Buddha, you cannot think anything else. And that shows you pretty quickly where you are. Just try it for 2 hours, you know, nothing than Buddha, and don't let the Buddha disappear. Buddha, 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 Buddha. And you will get back.
I've lost it for 3 months.
Yes, well, you will get back if you do it. The objective is to do it, not to let go. And it won't happen that, you know, the only thing that can happen is that the Buddha is lost and you enter actually deep samadhi. But this you will know.
Yes.
Everything else, then the mind has taken, or the kilesas haven't taken over the mind and led it somewhere else. So then you will take up your Buddha again, once you notice it. Okay?